Good morning. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra's Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is February 12th, 2024. Now, the 12th of February is the classical birthday celebration of one of our greatest presidents. That would be Abraham Lincoln. And I grew up in Chicago, which is in the state of Illinois. And Illinois is known as the land of Lincoln, even though I believe Abe was born in Kentucky, which is just south of Illinois. He did most of his early career in the state of Illinois. And so Illinois claims him as their most favored president, because I think he is the only president that has been from Illinois. Of course, he's very famous. So happy birthday, Abe Lincoln. We used to get this day off. Now I think they did something with something called President's Day, which never made any sense to me. Anyway, let's get back to our lecture. I know you want to know that, especially the listeners in every other country but the United States. I know you're fascinated by all this Americana and the little bit that I'm able to throw out to you. Okay, so this will be lecture number 5 in my biochemical mosaic 1. And remember, we're going to drill down to the phosphatic acid phosphatase, the enzyme which is responsible for synthesizing diacylglycerol from phosphatidic acid, a component of the Kennedy pathway involved in phospholipid, phosphoglycerol lipid synthesis, but also useful for the backbone of the production of sphingolipids and plasmalogens, and of course the diacylglycerol as an allosteric effector of protein kinase activity. And that just names a few things that go on after that reaction proceeds. And it's in the Kennedy pathway, named after Eugene Kennedy, who, by the way, worked at the University of Illinois for a while, same place that Conrad Bloch did. Eugene Kennedy worked in acylip metabolism, of course, Conrad Bloch in prenolip metabolism, both of which eventually won Nobel Prizes. And that was back when I was probably very young. They were working there at the University of Chicago. Little to my knowledge at the time. All right. So more about Americana and ancient history. Now let's get back to this issue. The important point to understand here is that we're dealing with multiple integrations of subcellular organeller fate, as well as an accomplished response to stress phenomena in a cell that is linked to multiple protease activities, which alter mitochondrial fate, and then ultimately amino acid metabolism and fatty acid synthesis and degradation, as well as, of course, cholesterologenesis and prenyl lipid synthesis and utilization in general, and then an entire response by the cell to either go into autophagy because of the stress that's inducing this, or limit autophagy, such as mitophagy, peroxisomophagy, or ultimately going all the way to programmed cell death. So you get the idea of how essential this is. That's why it's a deep cellular mosaic, and it's all biochemical. So let's start off this lecture with an ontic passage of where we are right now. Just as glutamine enters the plasma lemma through those SLC transporters, a process begins that is organized to what I would call a complex consequence of events. So we talked about this, and we're just going to blow right through. A glutamine may be cytosolically converted to asparagine, UDP, glucagon, carbamoyl phosphate, ultimately for pyrimidine biosynthesis, and or phosphoribosylamine for purine biosynthesis. Of course, glutamine may go more of the pedestrian route, transporting the mitochondria via an outer mitochondrial membrane, which is an SLC1A variant. Okay? So myosotic glutamine can then be deaminated to glutamate via dehydrogenase, or the glutamate oxaloacetic acid transaminase to alpha-ketoglutarate, thus entering the TCA cycle, eo-ipso bypassing isocitrate dehydrogenase, or possibly becoming converted to 2-hydroxyglutarate via a mutated form of an isocitrate dehydrogenase, isoform 2. Now, that route is used by cancer cells to diminish the production of NADH. And since the ETC, that is electron transport chain, is corrupted because of the protease YME1L intermitochondrially situated, which was activated by HIF-1 alpha, remember this hypoxia-1 alpha transcription factor, due to hypoxia caused by tumor growth leading away from blood supply and thus concentrations necessary for oxygenic metabolism of hemoglobin O2. That overall will cause then a decrease in the production of reactive oxygen, which is beneficial to the tumor. Okay? So the reason you're getting a corruption of the electron transport chain is because of that protease. The protease itself, at high enough concentration, can start to proteolytically degrade membrane proteins. Since this protease is in the inner membrane, and because of alterations in lipid metabolism, which you've already alluded to, because of the phosphatidic acid pathway leading ultimately to the potential for phosphoethylamine or not, those proteins degraded, then degrading the ETC lead to all of that bioenergetic sequelae. Okay. So you heard the beginning and the middle of the end of that entire story, which is going on just in the IM, the intermitochondrial membrane. Now, via energetics, supported in part by the glutamine utilization, and partially, of course, via glycolysis, just generating those two ATPs from anaerobic glycolysis, the tumor will grow. Now, for the tumor to divide and proliferate and eventually perhaps metastasize, you're going to need cellular proliferation. For cellular proliferation, you're going to need de novo lipogenesis. And we already mentioned to you how citrate levels can be used for ATP citrate lyase to generate acetyl-CoA and oxaloacetic acid in cytoplasm because of the utilization of glutamine. So citrate can still be synthesized, you see? And citrate can actually start decreasing in concentration in the mitochondria if it's measured, because it's being utilized for the production of cytosolic acetyl-CoA for lipogenesis. That includes phospholipid, sphingolipid, and prenolipid synthesis. Now, simultaneously, so understand this mosaic is all happening. It's not happening in an unordered fashion, quite the contrary. This whole system is working with an integrated efficiency so that it functions very well to maintain homeostasis, right? And even during a stress response, to deal with the stress response, convert the cell into alerting to the stress, apprehending it as grasping what the stress is, recollecting what the stress is, this before, and then acting upon it, right? So the cell is perfectly poised to carry out all these endeavors. At the same time, this is normal homeostasis, normal day-to-day operation of the cell, any given cell. Here we're talking particularly about cancer cells. That's why we were talking about unattached growth, and that's where this whole paper in 2019 was discussing this particular phenomenon. I've just blown it out into utilizing the scientific literature to give you a real understanding of what's going on, a dynamic event ontology, right? Which is what we want to do here. So simultaneously, that protease, YME1L, will completely reorder the proteome of pre-existing mitochondria. and that is a response directly to the hypoxia associated with the unattached growth of the growing tumor. So the inhibition, ultimately, of mTORC1, and remember that was a phosphorylation cascade, recall that? And what was a phosphorylation cascade? That had to do with AMP kinase as well, right? Yes. Well, because of the inhibition of mTORC1, there is an induced phosphoglycerolipid pathway event via the phosphatidic acid phosphatase. Now, that enzyme has a specific name. Actually, it's the gene's name. It's lipin1, L-I-P-I-N-1. Now, that decreases via alternate routing of the glycerol backbone via what's known as the nucleotide pathway. Details coming soon. That will decrease phosphatidylethanolamine levels in the mitochondrial membrane, thus enhancing further inner membrane proteolysis due to alterations in membrane leaflet geometrical orientation because of the anionic character of the phosphatidylethanolamine. And you're also going to get a zwitterionic shifting there because the phosphatidylethanolamine has to move through the inner part of the inner membrane between the two leaflets where the pH is dropping because of that proteolytic activity corrupting proton motive force through the inner mitochondrial membrane. That's right. I didn't mention that before. That's a new detail for I want you to think about. Okay. So what all of that does, membrane proteolysis, because of alteration in membrane leaflet geometrical orientation and phase diffusivity, which would be coupled to membrane fluidity. Thus, that protease, YME1L, degrades mitochondrial. This is not continuing on. This is an event. It degrades mitochondrial protein translocases, lipid transfer proteins. Remember, those protein translocases are moving around proteins in between the inner membrane space to the mitosol. And remember how that functions. We talked about that last lecture. Lipid transfer proteins, that's going to be moving bulk lipids, and metabolic enzymes that will acutely limit mitochondrial biogenesis, but still maintaining cellular growth. Okay? So the YME1L mediated mitochondrial proteomic pathology supports the growth of, in the particular case here, pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. Okay, that's the clinical association. Now consider the phosphatidic acid phosphatase then as the major enzyme dedicated to inducing tumor cell growth, since the PE-mediated programmed cell death becomes corrupted because PE levels drop. See? That's the point. See how that's why this is about phosphatidic acid. So that is where the rate-controlling organized disposition of the cellular alteration because of this membrane protease comes to its major locus at that level of PA denying higher levels of PE. Okay. You get how that works. And that means programmed cell death is corrupted. Now, you might wonder how a tumor can be teleologically programmed to enhance its own growth. Because what I'm describing here is blocking apoptosis and blocking increases in reactive oxygen species, which would also tend to intoxicate the tumor, right? Now, we would wonder that since there must be some physiological underlying substratum teleology to that bioenergetic shuffling. Otherwise, how could the tumor take advantage of it? The tumor isn't creating this ex nihilo. This system's already intact in place, in situ. So my synthesis of that, just at this point, okay, this particular tumor pathobiochemistry is set up because the system is rigged to accommodate. That means this is this natural environment to carry out this alteration of bioenergetics. The system is rigged to accommodate variable carbon sources for mitochondrial and therefore cell bioenergetic homeostasis. So glycolysis can readily feed carbon into the TCA cycle and thence electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation, all occurring when fatty acid oxidation is either not available due to low fatty acyl-CoA supply, perhaps from insufficient orphan receptor CD36 or lipoprotein lipase expression to plasma membrane level, thus rendering the Randall cycle inoperative. Go back and look up the Randall cycle if you don't remember that, or listen to one of my earlier lectures on it. Now, the loss of CD36 orphan surface receptor, for example, for serum albumin delivered free fatty acid uptake, and indeed the lipoprotein receptor, and then the lipases, all would require what? A functional endoplasmic reticulum, ribosomal, translational, and post-translational glycoprotein synthesis and correct folding and processing, all of which would be facilitated by available carbohydrate and dolichopyrophosphate to make the glycoproteins, plus chaperones. Those are the those help translocate proteins, remember, all of which become limiting as AMP kinase overpowers mTORC1 kinase activity, which would normally direct it towards anabolism. So the tumor then uses the standard secondary carbon source, again, when the Randall cycle is not functioning, maybe because there's no stored triacylglycerol, or because of, I just mentioned, processing of fatty acid at the plasma membrane, to be used as a source for fatty acid oxidation. Thus, that's the Randall cycle, that's what we're talking about there, supplying the NADH there, right? The tumor cell would rather then use glutaminolysis, which supports Warburg glycolysis, of course, while the cell does not yet commit, would not commit to programmed cell death, since one of the major reasons, reactive oxygen species levels remain low. And that's because the bioenergetic efficiency itself becomes a premium asset. All right. So that's this, my synthesis of this tumor pathobiochemistry. And there are arguments for and against what I just laid out as a series of premises. And we can discuss those in some later mosaic. I'm just giving you a biochemist's perspective on how the adaptation of the tumor, the pirating of this mechanism, which would normally occur just because of alterations in biofuel, biofuel meaning glucose, fatty acid, or amino acid, just to accommodate for the normal vagaries of cellular growth and differentiation, development, and perhaps even proliferation. And once the tumor has started to grow, all of that regulatory machinery kicks in because of the intermitochondrial protease functioning appropriately to start altering the ultimate phase of membrane so that the membrane reassociation due to the phosphatic acid phosphatase, lipin 1, enzymatic activity, lowering levels of phosphatidylethanolamine will change the entire ordering biochemistry of that inner membrane, which will then facilitate glutaminolysis and all the things I just mentioned to you. anaerobic glycolysis, actually aerobic because there's still plenty of oxygen until later on. Even hypoxia is increasing in the core of the tumor because of detachment growth, right? Yes. Okay. So that I think I made that clear without having to repeat myself. Now, I mentioned to you that this normal substrates for this YME1L, this is how we ended the last lecture, were OPA1. Remember, that was that GTP dynamase, GTPase dynamin in the inner mitochondrial membrane. The TIM17A, which is a protein transmembrane transporter that I mentioned to you. And this other protein called Prelid1. Okay, that's where we're ending. And I even mentioned too, I think that the TIM17A is associated with certain cancers. In fact, it's significantly elevated in BRCA, breast cancer, compared with normal tissue. And its overexpression is associated with poor overall survival. Now, because TIM17A is a substrate for YME1L, when YME1L is active, it decreases in concentration. So you understand there how the adaptation of the normal alteration of bioenergetic fuel that the cell performs just to deal with alterations in that fuel source. Once the tumor takes over and adapts that system, ultimately can also corrupt even that system beyond its normal effectiveness to maintain normal cellular growth. Thus, the tumor then, rather than just living as a homeostatic cell in a given, say, in a pancreas, right, will start to proliferate and metastasize by using the carbon source for citrate utilization to make acetyl-CoA and therefore lipogenesis, and enough nucleotide and enough NADPH being generated for cellular division. You see? And so it appears like the cancer cell is some kind of genius event when really it's not at all. It's just taking advantage of and then co-adapting, and I call it consequencing, of normal event ontologies. To be able to, and it's not doing it because it has a teleology. It occurs because of mutations and breakdown, ultimately, of the entire system's regulatory sequion. Right? Okay. And ultimately, it would kill, it would destroy the pancreas in this case, and would kill the human, right? So, not like an infection, which, especially a viral infection, which has no interest in killing a host, right? So you have hypoxia-induced increased turnover of OPA1 by YME1L, that is the protease. That will indicate when that occurs, because you're losing OPA1, and because OPA1 is involved in mitochondrial fusion, it will impair mitochondrial fusion. Okay. Now, when mitochondria fuse, that is a means by which to maintain the integrity of mitochondrial biochemical activity. It's not setting up for fission where you're going to get basically reproduction of the mitochondria. No, the fusion is to maintain mitochondrial integrity and not allow the mitochondria to be corrupted to the point of breaking up. Remember, into those substructures which can lead to engulfing portions of the cytoplasm and other organelle fragments, generating from the mitochondria an autophagolysosome, right? Which could ultimately lead to a programmed cell death. Right? So, loss of the YME1L results in the activation of a different OPA1 processing peptidase. Now that enzyme sounds similar to the GTPase dynamin. It's not. The peptidase is called OMA1. Now this occurs in monolayer cells and those spheroids. And what you see is an accumulation of OPA1 forms C. Remember, you get different forms of it because of proteolytic processing, and another isoform called E8. Okay. So deletion of OMA1, OMA1, now that is this other peptidase, suppresses mitochondrial fragmentation in cells where there was a knockout of the YME1. And yet, this deletion of OMA1, that peptidase, in that background of no YME1, did not affect the abundance of class one YME1L substrates in hypoxia. Okay, now why would that be? Because they're substrates for the protease. So if the protease isn't there, the substrate level isn't going to increase or decrease. Okay, it's going to remain the same. You understand? It's going to be maintained in a homeostatic, a proteostasis, if you will. Now, there was a turnover of OMA1 by YME1L in hypoxic cells. So when you add back the expression of the YME1L protease, there is a turnover of OMA1. Okay. And depletion of OMA1, I want you to understand, did not disturb the spheroid growth, this unattached growth, right? This tumorigenic type growth. Or did it restore spheroid formation when there was a knockout of YME1L, which is normally what occurred, you say? So that means the two pathways diverge. So the impaired spheroid growth of the YME1L depleted cells is not likely a direct result of mitochondrial fragmentation, which would be inherent to those cells. All right. So that also was a linear logic because non-spheroid growth, right, would be prone to or subjected to programmed cell death. But the spheroid growth, the unattached growth, which would enhance hypoxia, would not be so limited to that protease control overgrowth, right? Hence, the tumor grows when it becomes unattached. Now, I hope that you're getting this. It's a lot of, I know, tumor cell biology and a lot of tumor pathobiochemistry now we're introducing you to, but this is for the ability to generate the mosaic. See, the mosaic isn't a photograph. It's basically a functional, if you want to use the metaphor, it's like a movie of what's going on. It's a temporal sequence, right? So you have to understand these changes that are occurring then alter the direction of future delta, future changing, right? And those changes are both temporal and spatial, and therefore biochemical, phenomenological in character. Okay. So that's the whole reason we're doing this mosaic, so that as you start to get into serious authentic biochemistry, which is what we're doing here, hopefully every lecture, you get the true understanding of how cells function and cells within tissues and tissues within organs and then organs within an entire organism like the human body. All right. So we're going to stop there. A lot more details still to go. We haven't even gotten into the whole lipid framework yet, but we will. This week for sure, we're probably going to finish this mosaic, but who knows? You know, when I read more literature, I encounter new ideas and indeed new knowledge. And so I have to expand the amount of time I have to devote to the topic until we feel like it's exhausted or at least ready for another month or two till new information arises. Dr. Dan Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry podcast on this Monday morning on the 12th of February, saying bye for now.